So look, everyone, before we begin, a quick language advisory. This particular episode covers online sexual harassment that women face. And as a result, there's strong language and some descriptions of sexual violence. So if you have kids in the room or in the car, you might want to put on some headphones or maybe save the episode for later.
The reality was that even in areas of, you know, threats of sexual violence, so threats of rape and sexual assault were being sent by women as well as by men. So women were saying things like, "I hope you get raped in your bed," to other women.
I'm Michelle King, and this is She Innovates, a podcast that shares the stories, challenges, and triumphs of women across innovation, technology, and entrepreneurship. Today we have the absolute pleasure of speaking with Faye Rancock, who is the head of communications at the global media agency Havas UK. We're going to be chatting with Faye about a really important and confronting topic, which is the online harassment and abuse that women in particular face. Faye is going to be sharing her research findings and some practical tips that all of us can take to stop online harassment. After reading The Power by Naomi Alderman, Faye Rancock was so inspired she decided to research how people react to women when they're in positions of power. She commissioned a group of social analysts at Havas UK to see what online abuse powerful women experience and how they're treated in the world of social media. Faye, welcome to the show. I thought we'd get started by getting you to share a little bit more about, you know, what your research set out to look for and what you found.
Sure. So one of the biggest and most shocking things about it was the scale. When we first started looking into it, we couldn't believe quite how significant that was. So of the 150 women that we identified in different positions of power and in different power groups, we found that in a 6-month period, those women received 43,000 tweets, which involved some kind of sexist abuse, which works out at about 240 every single day. So each woman in each of those groups was receiving, you know, over 200 messages that were pretty shocking, some of them in nature, every day. So in terms of the type of nature of the abuse that they were receiving, it ranged right through from what we categorise as gender-specific slurs. So those are words that are quite commonly used, which are usually derogatory about women, right through to, at the very extreme end of the scale, threats of sexual violence. And right across the board, we found some real spikes and interesting experiences that were specific to certain areas like body objectification and sexual harassment that were specific to certain women in certain groups.
Who are the perpetrators? Who's actually doing the tweeting?
Yeah, it's really interesting this. We just made an assumption, I suppose, as many of us do, that the majority of the abuse that is sent to these women in power particularly is sent by men. But the reality is actually the opposite. So what was happening is there were almost exactly the same amount of tweets being sent that involved sexist abuse by women as men. So the reality was that even in areas of threats of sexual violence, so threats of rape and sexual assault were being sent by women as well as by men. So women were saying things like, "I hope you get raped in your bed," to other women. So we were really, really shocked by that. And pretty upset by it, to be honest. And as a group, we were looking at it and saying, is this really real? Is this the kind of thing we're experiencing? And then we started looking at specific women in specific examples. And it was really shocking when you looked down to the, you know, minutest sort of granular level of each woman and their individual experiences. It really was as bad as that. And it came from both women and men.
Wow. You know, that alone is a really powerful finding. I mean, that is just, that's amazing. But who does it apply to? I mean, who makes up this group of powerful women?
Okay, so the group was 150 women. They were separated into 5 categories of sort of what we call, we describe them as power groups. And each power group represented a different industry or profession. So we had global leaders and politicians. We had broadcasters and TV personalities. We had athletes and entertainers. So across the piece, we saw, as you can imagine, quite different experiences. So, for example, the entertainers as a group, they were objected to a very high volume, which is probably not surprising when you consider the types of people who are in the group. Like, you know, Taylor Swift has 85 million Twitter followers, so it's not surprising that there's a high volume of conversation that goes on her social media channels and many like her. But when you look in percentage terms, the highest percentage of tweets that they received that involved sexual harassment was in that group that was about body objectification. And I've had lots of conversations with people since we did the research, which explored a bit about that. And a few people have said to me, oh, well, you know, it's not that big a surprise. Taylor Swift prances around in a bikini in her music videos, or, you know, in a crop top. So obviously she's using her body to ply her trade. So, you know, maybe that's the reason why she is subjected to that kind of objectification. But that kind of challenged me a bit, because I kind of thought I could see some logic in that argument until I went back and looked at the sample group again. You know, the sample group of 32, I think it is, overall entertainers that we looked at included the likes of Oprah Winfrey and, you know, and Emma Watson. And I'm pretty sure that none of those women are prancing around in bikinis, you know, on YouTube. So I was kind of like, I'm pretty sure that that doesn't really hold true for me. But it's interesting that there's a sense within society that that's something that would be acceptable, or that we would, you know, almost explain away. And then when you look at politicians and global leaders, that was also quite an interesting group, because we found that they were very much attacked about their intellect and ability. So in that group, there was a really high skew towards, you know, things like, you're a stupid cow and you can't do your job and you don't know what you're talking about, you silly bitch, and stuff like that.
You know, I have a real issue with that, because I feel that it's almost a form of benevolent sexism. You know, what we're saying is, if you prance around in a bikini or you prance around with barely any clothes on, it's fine for people to harass you. I mean, that just doesn't feel right.
I think it's really interesting. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And do you know what else I think is really interesting? Part of the research which we did was around how the media represents these women. So not just how we treat them, but also how the media represents them on social media. And it was really interesting how much objectification the media, you know, the official media channels, particularly in the UK press, where we have, you know, real tabloid journalism, and, you know, the amount of body objectification that was done by those media groups in tweeting about these women in our power groups was really significant. There was a famous front page on the Daily Mail in the UK when Theresa May was early on in her role in Number 10 Downing Street, where she had a meeting with the leader of the Scottish Party, and together there was a picture of both of them in skirt suits. And, you know, the headline was something about their legs. It was a question about who had the better legs between the two women. And it's like, you know, that kind of thing is how the media represents these women to the world. And does that give the rest of society permission to act in a sexist fashion towards them? You know, does that open a conversation with society more generally that says, well, if it's on the front page of the Daily Mail, it must be okay to talk about whether Theresa May has good legs or not?
So Faye, you know, you've talked about the experiences of powerful women in those categories, but I just wondered, could you maybe share, you know, how this links to us? So people listening to the show, you know, why does it matter to them?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. For a lot of people, these power women seem at an arm's length, you know, a length removed from them, and not something that they would ever personally experience. So, you know, why should I worry about it? But I think it's much more significant and much closer to home than that for so many of us. You know, the Me Too and Time's Up movements that are gathering so much pace and continue to have such an impact are also about everyday women in their workplace. And I think all of us understanding that this is an environment where we need to make change, where we need to stand up for one another, where we need to look out for each other, and where we need to, you know, we pay a lot of lip service to the concept of sisterhood and the way we treat each other. And I think this is where we let ourselves down. If we're on social media because it's a place where we feel we're at arm's length and one removed, and we can't see, you know, the whites of the eyes of the person we're sending these messages to, we feel like somehow that it doesn't have an impact. Trust me, it does. Talking to the women who, you know, after we'd done the research, we approached a few of the women who we'd looked at. And when we spoke to them about the impact on them, you know, there's no denying that over 200 tweets every single day has an impact on a woman and makes her question things and makes her feel a certain way. And I think we all have a responsibility to understand that that is also about how we treat one another. It's in our workplaces, it's in our homes, it's in our relationships, you know, in so many ways we have to understand that this kind of underlying misogyny and this underlying, you know, willingness to accept sexism in the way we communicate with women is really fundamental to each and every one of our lives in every way, you know, and it comes through in every conversation we have. So, you know, my call would be to every woman out there and every man too who cares about the impact of their behavior on other people to stop and think before they press send. You know, while they're typing, wonder what it would be like to say it out loud to that person's face, because I really feel we can make an impact if we started to ask that question before we send these messages to each other.
You know, that's really interesting about the impact of some of the messages. You know, the fact that some of it actually isn't sexual, some of it is really about individual competency and kind of knocking women's confidence, right, in their capability. I mean, is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. There was a whole section, a whole category within the research, which was about questioning intellect and ability. And, you know, for example, one of the women we looked at is a woman called Laura Koonsberg. She is the BBC's political editor here in the UK. She's one of the most senior political journalists, and certainly in UK broadcasting. And, you know, her experience was absolutely vile. You know, some of the messages she was being sent at certain points were really significant and would have had an impact on anyone. I challenge anyone to be able to just sort of walk away from those and to not be hurt or feel them somehow. And it's really interesting that they were specific to accusations of her not being able to be objective in her job, that she was incapable of doing her job effectively. And they were often related somehow to her, you know, particularly with the BBC, which is, you know, prides itself on its objectivity and is held up as an example of objective journalism all over the world. You know, that goes right to the heart of her professionalism, to the heart of her ability to do her job. And she was being attacked for it day in, day out.
According to a study in 2017 by the Pew Research Center, roughly 41% of Americans have been personally subjected to harassing behavior online. They also found that women, especially young women, encounter sexualized forms of abuse at much higher rates than men. With such a widespread problem, individuals and institutions are constantly looking for answers on how this can be addressed. So Faye, look, I mean, I guess the million-dollar question, right, is how do you deal with online trolls?
This is really hard because it really is the million-dollar question. And funnily enough, during the research phase, we did actually look at some of the ways in which some women deal with trolls. And the reality is different women deal with it in different ways. Some work really well because of the personality of the person, you know, engaging in that, and some don't work. So it is a really tricky thing. And I don't think there's really a right answer. What I would say is support someone you see being abused or trolled. Do whatever you can to support them, even if it's just to send them a direct message, even if you don't want to do it in a public forum, a direct message online that says, I'm thinking of you, the way you're being treated is awful, I really hope you're okay, you know, sending a virtual hug. At the very least, do that, right? If you feel comfortable calling it out, then call it out. But understand that for some people, that is like a red rag to a bull and can make a situation worse. So, you know, and actually you might end up, you know, with the troll turning their target on you. And that can be also very difficult. So I would say there's no one solution. There's no one answer. Look at each situation in its own right. But I would call on everyone to stop and think before they tweet. So the more of us stop and think before we send messages, the less of these messages there are out there for us to then have to deal with. But if you're seeing messages being sent by someone else, make a judgment on how you think is best to deal with it. But if you can call it out, please do, because we believe that the loss of social capital will fundamentally change people's behavior in the long run.
But Faye, could you just explain that? I mean, what does a loss of social capital really mean?
What I mean by loss of social capital is if somebody has got a greater profile because they're tweeting somebody famous and that conversation is getting a lot of traction on a social media platform, then that in a way is social capital. It might feel like it should be negative, but actually for that person, that's what they're after. They're after fame. So finding a way to call it out that says, I'm not getting into this with you. This is not a tit for tat. We're not in a row here. You're just being out of order and you need to stop. I think it's a good thing to do. I think it says to people, would you really be comfortable if someone said that to your mother, to your brother? It's not just about women, this. It's about how we treat each other as human beings online.
You know, Faye, I think this idea of just letting the community take control, it really does wonders. I mean, I've experienced that even myself, right, on my own social media account. You just let the community take care of the trolls. It's a great strategy. And they do. They always show up, which is great. I just wondered, though, you know, at an industry level, I mean, what is the responsibility of media organizations or, you know, really any organization to try and prevent online harassment?
I mean, you know, it's funny. The media thing is a really big point. I mean, you know, one of the things we'd really love to do is to actually say to the media industry and all of those publications that often objectify women without even thinking twice about it, you have a responsibility too. You're making this permissible in the eyes of the rest of the world. So understand what your responsibility is. Understand that you have a platform where you can change behavior if you choose to act in the correct fashion. And then also the technology companies, I really feel like, well, you know, there's a real call to action to them too. You know, it's like understanding that these platforms that you say have democratized the internet and in lots of ways have liberated people and helped them to understand better the world around them, that's all great. And they're the reason why we love them. But they also have a responsibility too, and to expose women and not to these types of risks and to not understand or mitigate against them somehow. That to me is acts of negligence. You know, it's kind of sticking their heads in the sand and ignoring a problem that is there that needs addressing. And I'm sure that they're much cleverer minds than mine can come up with ways to allow blocks or to allow filters or allow ways for women to be better protected online than they currently are.
Faye, you've shared, you know, loads of really great advice. But before we go, I just wondered, you know, do you have any other messages for our listeners as to why this is really important?
I think my greatest thought, and I suppose this is the gift I'd like to give my daughter and everybody else who's out there, is if you have children or you have access to children, you have an ability to influence really young people, I would start there. My request would be talk to them about how kindness isn't just face to face. This generation and all the generations after them are growing up in a world where, you know, their interactions are very different from the ones even of yours and my generation, Michelle, God forbid that we share how old we are. But you know, the reality is these generations that are coming after us, they're experiencing a world with a different filter. And I really would like to see all of us talking to young people and young children about kindness being not just something that we say, be kind, gentle hands, like they say in primary schools. You know, it's also about how we conduct ourselves in every medium of our lives. And kindness is something we know we can apply in lots of different ways. When we give to charity, when we make efforts for other people who we've never met and never will meet, but we choose to do those things because it's kindness, it's generosity of spirit. Our greatest gift we can give this next generation and the generations that come after them is to help them to understand that kindness can apply online just as much as it can in the real world.
I think the takeaways from my interview with Faye are really that we all need to stop and think about how we engage online. We need to think about the language we use when we're on social media. I mean, while it doesn't sound like a lot, 140 characters can do a lot of damage. We also can support other women who call out their abusers online. We can retweet their messages. We can share our own messages of support. You know, we can spread the word that online sexism will no longer be tolerated. You know, I hope all of you are going to be able to apply some of the advice Faye shared from this interview today. In our next episode, we're really thrilled to speak with a pioneer in improving well-being and workplace culture, Arianna Huffington, founder of Thrive Global. Arianna will join us to talk about how women can do less to achieve more. So tune in again next week.
From the Human Group, She Innovates is a podcast created with support from SAP NextGen, an innovation platform that enables everyone, from individuals, companies, partners, and universities, to connect and innovate with purpose. In doing so, SAP NextGen supports the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals.